Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
That I know him. I don't think he knows me as well as I know him, but I'm going to inform him how I know him. But everybody, please say hello to our guest, Mark Anthony. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Bonnie. How you doing?
I thought that song was so appropriate for you. I am doing fine. Let me just introduce you in a better way. Everyone, if you don't know who Mark Anthony is, of course, he's my Mark Anthony. I'm his Cleopatra. But just to let you know who he is, if you don't, he is the author of one of the most fabulous, most groundbreaking books I can't even tell you that I've read in a long time. The book's name is Never Letting Go, Healing Grief from the Other Side. And I think I've read this book and given it to many people, Mark, for the last, like, I'd say year or two. It is such a groundbreaking book. I want to thank you for writing it.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie. First off, thank you very much, and I appreciate your kind words about Never Letting Go. And just today, I received what they call the proof for my next book, Evidence of Eternity. The publisher sent it to me, so we're going over the final edits on the book.
Ah!
And I love this phase because it's like on page 275, could you change this word to that word? And on page 102, could you just rephrase this one sentence as opposed to, we really hate this chapter, rewrite it.
Well, Mark, you know what? I just can't believe that because you are a lawyer and you know your words. So that's hard for me to believe. But I am excited.
Well, what it comes down to is sometimes there may be just a word that can change the connotation of a sentence. And, you know, I have been writing quite a bit, certainly as an attorney and now as an author. But then it comes into split infinitives, dangling participles, verb agreement, you know, all those type of things. Because we don't really write. We do not write the way we speak. Because you can say, I met this guy and they told me, where I met this man and he told me. Because we tend to use a lot of slang in our verbal interchanges. Our sentence structure and our grammar gets kind of sloppy and lax because, yeah, it's just the way people talk. And it's not just in English. I mean, everybody does it in pretty much every language. And so the written word has to be more grammatically correct, except when I'm writing dialogue. Because in my new book, Evidence of Eternity, I chronicle a lot of my journeys to all over the world in this search for understanding God and the afterlife. And there's a chapter where I talk about my visit to the Amazon jungle, then another one where I'm in Thailand, and then, you know, all over the U.S. and so on and so forth. So it's been quite challenging, and I appreciate the great introduction. And it's kind of fortuitous because this is the same day that I'm putting the final touches on Evidence of Eternity.
I am so honored, Mark. I can't tell you. I mean, I'm going to drool all over you because this book, I don't know how, I'm just really excited about your next book. And I told Susan that. And because, you know, I this book has meant so much to me. And I'm going to tell everybody out there listening, and I have been telling them, especially since knowing you were coming on the show, this book, the proof is there. So I can't wait till your next book comes out because, Mark, you do such a beautiful job in mixing your practice of law and your medium abilities that is almost magical in that book. And that's because, you know, I'm a nurse, so I love, you know, I'm a legal nurse consultant, but Susan says I can't talk about myself. But, you know, I just love how you did that in this book. So what difference, and this is, you know, I want you to talk about Never Letting Go. I do want to open with something that I think everybody should hear. But then I want to hear, like, what could you be telling us? Evidence of the Afterlife is so cool because, or Eternity. Because
Evidence of Eternity, yes.
Eternity. It is so cool because you've given us evidence. I mean, this book has evidence. I can't wait to read your next book. What do you have in it?
Well, thank you. Well, Never Letting Go was a labor of love. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it as much for me as I did for anybody else because we all need help getting through the grieving process. And just because we're intuitives or mediums or psychics does not mean that we're immune from the pain of loss and grief.
Absolutely.
And as an attorney, I like evidence. I mean, that's what attorneys do. We produce evidence. And as an evidential medium, facts validating and validated information are extremely important to verify the identity of the spirit and the truth of the messages. So I started tracking trends of what happens during readings, and I've developed several new and innovative concepts and ways of looking at mediumship. So Evidence of Eternity is bringing the terminology surrounding mediumship out of the Victorian era, where it was first studied, and into the 21st century. And it weaves together quantum physics, science, physiology, theology, evidential mediumship to explain the nature of the other side, what happens when you leave your body and transition into the light, understanding the science behind spirit communication, the full ramifications of what these readings mean, and then it tackles difficult issues like crime, homicide, suicide, losing a child, losing a pet, and reincarnation. Because as I've been traveling around the country on my book tour for my book Never Letting Go, people ask lots of questions. So I started keeping track of these questions. What happens when I die? My son committed suicide. Did he go to hell? What about reincarnation? Can I communicate with somebody if they've already reincarnated and I want to talk to them? And what's the other side like? You know, is there a hell? Is there a devil? Is there a God? And so all these questions kept coming, and I decided that the best way to to answer them is to actually write a book about it. So that's what Evidence of Eternity, it's not Never Letting Go Part 2. It's taking it to another level. So Never Letting Go is a guide on the journey through grief, and Evidence of Eternity is understanding how does this all work, what does it mean, and what happens on the other side.
I'm so excited, Mark, because, like, I wrote 15. Now, everybody out there will say, oh, my goodness, Bonnie's ADD. She doesn't write. But I have written 15 pages of questions. I know about what they mean, but for you, you explained it so well in the book that I'm just excited to read that second book. I do want to ask you about Never Letting Go, and I'm dying. I mean, I'm living, but I'm dying to read your next book. I would have loved, I can't wait till it comes out. I hope that you send me, I'm going to say it on air, and I hope you send me a signed copy of your book, because I'm the best promoter for your books ever. I won't, go ahead.
It will be a privilege. It will be my privilege.
Thank you, Mark, because if Susan, I don't hear her saying anything, but I told her I was going to tell everybody I channeled your book, but she didn't think you'd be happy about that, so I'm not going to say it. But I am going to say that I do want a signed copy, because...
Why? You always say you channeled mine.
Oh, just hush up there. I do want to tell you that you open, and I do want to let everybody know listening, I want to open with something, because there's a couple of questions I do want to ask you. I mean, I wish you would go through your whole new book, but I know that you want people to read it, and I do want to, if you do, could give some, you know, like give me an example of one of what you have just said, especially about quantum physics, because I think my husband would love it. But here, I need to just open, and I want everybody to hear this, because I think it meant a lot to a lot of people, Mark, and I know it does to you. And that's, you know, I want to know the feeling. Because I can tell you the feeling when I read it, and I wonder if that is why you put it in your book. Okay, so grief is the price of love. You grieve as deeply as you love. Love is the great experience of life itself. Do you know who that is a quote from?
Father Sonny.
Yes.
Let me tell you about Father Sonny. He was a good family friend in addition to being a Catholic priest, and he was the warmest, most loving person, and all of his sermons were always about love. He always took it back to love. On the Feast of St. Francis, which is on October 4th, he would do the blessings of everybody's pet at church. It was hysterical. I mean, people were bringing dogs, cats, bunnies, hamsters, birds, you know. It was like a zoo. And, I mean, he was just a really loving guy. And when he walked in the room, you could feel like the presence, you know. But he was real funny too. I mean, he'd sit there and he'd be cooking pasta and all that. I'd go, you want a martini? I mean, he was a real regular guy. And I remember he said one time that he met Mother Teresa at the Vatican, and he said when she walked into the room, it was as if the presence of God walked with her. And I remember thinking, if he felt that. It's like, oh my God. If he felt that, she must have just been an amazing presence. He said she was the most humble and the most, it was just like she was like a ray of light. And so he was also what is known as a Monsignor. A Monsignor is the rank in the church, if you will, below bishop. And he was a member of an order of priests, the La Salettes, and they're a small order based out of France, and they're like kind of like the intellectual mavericks of the Catholic Church, and they're real progressive and open-minded. And I really miss Father Sonny. I remember when he died, it was just horrible. And but he's such a warm and loving man, and that's something that he said, is that we grieve as deeply as we loved, and love and grief is the price of love. But he also said that a life without love isn't much of a life at all. And there are a lot of people who probably distance themselves from emotional attachments so that they will not feel the pain of loss. And Sonny said, that's not what we're here for. He said, yeah, we love and then we grieve. But that's all part of the human experience. He was just a really amazing man.
Oh, and I know that you know, I'm reading the book and I can feel how much he meant to you. And that's why I had to open. I didn't actually open the show with that, but it was one of the quotes that I knew I had to bring forth for everybody to listen to. Because I'm hoping that after the show, Mark, I've given this book to so many people that I lost track. What I did was I got it on digital, so I couldn't give it away. I had to order another copy in order for me to go through it again. But I have given this book because, you know, the holiday seasons are coming up, and, you know what happens during the holiday season. And, you know, I think anybody who is grieving, this book is very, very important for them to read. And
Go ahead. Well, it, Never Letting Go is the appropriate gift, if you will, to give to somebody who is facing the holidays without a loved one. I mean, we're coming up on Thanksgiving, Veterans Day, Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's, Kwanzaa. These are times where families get together and enjoy each other's company and celebrate their love, and then they look and see the empty chair at the table or the bedroom with the bed that will never be slept in again, the clothes that will never be worn again. And a lot of times when you know somebody who has lost a loved one and you don't know what to get them, I mean, flowers fade. You can only tell them so many times, if there's anything you need, let me know. Never Letting Go will give them hours of enjoyment in reading and years of healing. So it really has been remarkable how many people have been giving this as gifts. I understand that a lot of hospice organizations are recommending it, and several grief counselors throughout the country are recommending it as well. So that's why it's such an important thing during the holiday season.
And I love it. And you know what, really, Mark, and then I want to go into your new book, but, and I want to go into all, you know, that you do, you go around and you do bookstores, and people should go and see you. I have many people on this line right now who have seen you in bookstores, who are your fans. But, you know, this book also brings to light your legal career. And so I'm so interested in how, you know, I have a question about juror number 9. You probably forgot all about that.
Joe, no, I'll never forget that one. Juror number 9. Yes, go ahead.
I'll refresh your memory, because if you can't, I'm going to.
Oh, no, I know the story. What happened is, and people ask me a lot, well, how do you reconcile being an attorney and a medium? And do the careers ever collide? There was this case I was trying, and my client was charged with a battery. And basically, he was kind of a rednecky guy, you know, big rough and tumble guy. And it was a mutual combat situation. It was like, you know, with all due respect to my client and to the legal system, it was redneck A got in a fight with redneck B, okay? And and this is in Florida, so it's not like this is the, you know, one time
in
the year.
Hey,
I'm
in Florida.
Well, yeah, I am too. You know? So,
I know what you're talking about.
So it is a crime of violence, and I owe a duty to my client to select the most fair and impartial jury as possible. And for those who may not be familiar with the way a trial works, before you get into putting witnesses on the witness stand and taking evidence, there's a section, it's jury section of the trial known as jury selection. The technical term is voir dire, or as we say in Florida, voir dire. But and what that is the prosecution gets to ask the potential jurors questions. The defense gets to ask the jurors potential questions to determine if there's any biases or prejudice or preconceived notions. And so I'm getting ready to do my bit. The prosecutor sat down, and I kept getting pulled to this one juror, juror number 9, a very attractive a woman, and I kept feeling a female presence around her. And because this was a crime of violence, I had to make sure that she didn't have a problem with this. But as the female spirit started coming through stronger, I felt this tightening around my throat, and which indicated that she had difficulty breathing. So I asked her, I said, have you or has anyone in your family ever been the victim of a violent crime? And this poor lady, she looks up at me and the tears start to roll from her eyes and she's trembling. And she said, a year ago, my sister was in a foreign country when an escaped mental patient strangled her and dismembered her body and threw it into a dumpster like she was trash. And I'm standing there and my client looks up to me and I hear him like, dude, what are you doing? And I literally have a foot in both worlds. And now I know why I was feeling the tightening around my throat, because the spirit of her sister was coming through really strong, yet I had an ethical and professional obligation to defend this guy to the best of my ability. And if you want to find out what happens, you're going to have to read Never Letting Go.
You know what? I love how you just ended that, because I get so absorbed when I read each one, everything in that book. And I don't read anymore, unfortunately. I will read your book, but these kind of books I read. But I've for some reason the last year or so I have not been able to pick up, except metaphysical books. It's tough. So I will, but it your book is so fascinating. You know, and you know, I just would like to know, and everybody else, I'm sure, would love to know. When you stand there, do you actually see, like, when you're picking? How do you ask them to step back, Mark, if you're actually doing your work? And when did you decide that you could come out and tell people in your field that this is what you do? Because you're out of the closet, honey. You are out of the closet.
All right, hold on. Let's hold on, Bonnie. Let's give me one question at a time. You gave me about five questions there. So, what's the first question?
First question is, when you go into a jury room, do you see spirit, and how does it affect you when you're having a trial?
Well, when I go into a courtroom, it depends on the situation, because normally in spirit communication, you have to be kind of calmed down and relaxed, and I'm very good about turning it on and turning it off. And most of the time, a courtroom is an inappropriate place. But that particular circumstance, that woman's spirit wanted to get through, and she was going to get through. So a spirit's going to get through no matter what. There's this one judge that I used to go in front of fairly often, and she's from the West Indies. And every time I'm in her courtroom, I pick up on a maternal grandmother who really wants to get my attention. And it's not like I go, Your Honor, may I approach the bench? If it please the court, your grandmother on your mother's side is coming through in spirit and wants you to know, you know. So, because it's inappropriate. It's like these TV shows where somebody runs into a restaurant and says, hi, I'm a medium and your grandmother wants you to know this. Well, yes, that makes for entertaining television, but it certainly isn't real and it isn't reality. And people say, well, it's on TV and we saw it. I said, well, yeah, but you have to realize, now, watch that show. Look at the production quality. It's fantastic, right? And you have perfect makeup, perfect lighting, perfect sound. Oh, not to mention the 12 different camera angles, including close-ups that are always in focus.
Yeah.
That 30-second to 90-second reading actually took 7 hours to film. Oh, by the way, she didn't just run into a restaurant. There's a 20-person camera crew with her. Or him, however, you know, the show is. And, and everybody in the restaurant has to sign a release so that their image can be used on television. So we have to be careful about reality television being real. I'm not saying that maybe the person that the medium has read for, perhaps the medium did a reading for them prior to that, and then they've gone over it and scripted it or whatever. But a lot of these things, it's not real. It's not real. The real ones are when they're sitting down in a room together, because they can do a 2-3 camera shoot with, you know, fixed angles. Then that tends to appear to be more realistic. So walking into a courtroom and just flinging, you know, messages to people from their deceased loved ones, I also think, Bonnie, that there's a code of ethics, mm-hmm. or there should be, and professionalism. You know, somebody in a restaurant eating tomato soup is there to eat tomato soup, not all of a sudden connect with their grandmother. So, we have to. It's like being a dentist. You know, you're sitting in a laundromat and you look at somebody and realize they have a tooth and you grab a pair of pliers and stick it in their mouth and yank a tooth out. All right, they would be mortified if you did that. And on a professional level, it's the same way when you just fling a reading at somebody.
I agree with you. I do have to tell you, and I know Susan's laughing behind me, is that, you know, and when you do that, Mark, I've been hit by spirit. I'm on that head because it isn't, it isn't appropriate. And I do believe there is a code of ethics, just like you. I also want to, something really has intrigued me in your book also, and everybody throws this term around, Mark. I'm not quite
sure. Hey, Bonnie. Yes. Bonnie. We're now getting echoes all over the place.
Yeah.
So,
they
need to do something to clean up the sound.
Okay, let's see if that helps. Okay, one of the things that really has intrigued me, and then I want to ask about your tour. I know you're going to New York. I know you've got this new book coming out. But one thing that everybody's intrigued about, Mark, and it is in your book, is free will. I know this is a big subject, but, you know, in there you had said that, and I agree with you, and I, you know, it's just how I am. I guess maybe because I agree with you with everything. Maybe. But you're appointed a day that you're born, and then you say there's a day that you die. We believe that in the Jewish religion, by the way, a day that in the book of life is your death date. But then you said that there is a life plan for you, and then you have free will. So can you explain what you mean? Because I think a lot of people would love to know what that means.
There's a day we're coming in, and there's a day we're going out. That I'm a firm believer in. It's what happens in between that we have control over. And I think for the most part, there are certain experiences we're going to have. There's certain people we're going to interact with. So think of it as you draw a dot on a sidewalk with some sidewalk chalk, and then 5 feet away you draw another dot. Okay, now we know from math that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. But instead of a straight line, let's say an ant is going from point A to point B. And ants don't travel in a straight line. The ant may waver to the right, to the left, may kind of loop back around, may get way off track, but eventually the ant's going to make it to point B. And so the decisions and the free will that we have along the way, that's the gift that we're given. So there's an overall life plan, but the fact that, you know, maybe today you ate a pistachio nut ice cream cone, probably not in your life plan, but maybe you were supposed to be in a place where you're going to meet a particular man or woman, and that place happened to cause you to go get ice cream, and then you run into that person or whatever. So that's how I think that, and that's how I believe that it works.
I think that's so interesting, Mark. I because, you know, everybody, especially if you're a medium psychic and you have any, and I believe everybody has a gift, but if you use your gift, a lot of people say, why did this happen to me? And you have that in your book. Why did this happen to me? And you can, with your book, I love how you explain grief with behavior, which is too cool. Do you have a minor in psychology?
I think when you practice law, mm-hmm. in the fields of personal injury and criminal defense work and prosecution. Plus, I was always fascinated in psychology and human behavior. So mm-hmm. as an attorney, I'm a trained observer of human behavior. And it's hard not to have any type of people skills without some type of understanding in psychology.
Yeah, I think you do. I think you have a great deal of understanding about people and human behavior, because another thing that you do in this book, which I love, is you say grief, or you compare grief with behavior, which you say some people will go and join groups, and you know, and their grieving is really put to some good use. And then others, which you are a criminal defense attorney, go into the drug and the, you know, and the other side of life, which is really interesting to me, Mark. So I love that because it does describe what can happen with grief. And that's really what your book does. It shows you how different people understand grief.
We all grieve in our own way, but once again, free will. We have a choice to take a positive route or a negative route. And the way I like to describe it is, if you'll indulge me, if I tell a story.
I love it.
Years ago, one of my best friends, we went to Costa Rica, and he was great. We used to travel a lot together because he's sort of my I've had two friends in my life, and sadly they're both on the other side now, but they're my adventure friends, okay? And this was my friend Brad, and we went to Costa Rica, and we went whitewater rafting and jungle hiking, and I mean it was just like a total eco tour, and we were staying at this hotel near the Manuel Antonio rainforest. And so we walked out of the hotel, we walked onto the beach, and, you know, if you've ever been on the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, I mean, it's beautiful. And so we're walking down the beach, and we're talking and all this and that. We're like, well, what are we going to do tonight? And da-da-da-da-da. So we walked so far, you couldn't even see the hotel anymore. And then all of a sudden, the storm comes out from over the from the ocean, and lightning starts streaking across the sky. And one thing I do know is you get off the beach when it's lightning. So we're like, what do we do? What do we do? Well, you know, knucklehead me, I leave the hotel. I'm just wearing, you know, some baggies, and I was not wearing any shoes. Because I thought, well, we were just taking a walk on the beach, but we got, you know, into talking, and we didn't realize we walked like 5 miles, and because it was so beautiful. So he goes, we got to go for cover. So we start running towards the jungle, and then the rain comes down, and in Costa Rica, it's like a fire hose coming out of the sky, and all of a sudden we hear like all over the place coming out of the jungle. We stop, and I'm like, what was that? And it's like, we're here coming out of the jungle, and I'm like, and we just seen Jurassic Park, you know, which like took place in Costa Rica. We're like, oh my god. And even though I was pretty sure it wasn't a velociraptor or a T-Rex, it was pretty intimidating sound. And then we're like, I go, I'm not going in there, and the rain's pouring, and he goes, well, let's try to run back to the hotel. Well, we're trying to run. We made like 20 feet. I mean, we're like drenched. And then a lightning bolt goes off in the sky above us. I go, that's it. So we go into the jungle. And now we're walking through the jungle. And let me tell you something. I do not recommend hiking through a Central American rainforest barefoot. But there I was, okay? And I'm getting all cut up, and I'm stepping on all kinds of stuff, and it's deep, and it's dark, and there's things moving around the trees above us. We're hearing, whoa! I'm like, oh my God. I'm going to be eaten by something my family's never going to know, you know? And so it was dark, it was scary, it was terrifying. But then our eyes began to adjust, and we were pushing through the bushes, and then we saw what kind of looked like a path, and we started following it. And by this time, you know, I'm starting to get cut up pretty bad, and the mosquitoes are all over me, and then I see a what looked like a clear path, and then I saw the things up in the trees. Well, they were howler monkeys. And they were just as afraid of the lightning as we were. And they you know, when they get upset, they call out to each other, and you know, they have this blood-curdling, you know, scream, howl. That's why they call them howler monkeys. And then one path led to a bigger path, and then we realized that was leading to the hiking path. And so then we began to follow that path, and it took well over an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, to get back to where we were staying. And I was pretty badly banged up. And the way I look at it is that's how the journey through grief is. you can give in to your fear and get lost in the jungle and go in circles. In other words, you can turn to drugs and alcohol or impulsive behaviors. You can throw a pity party and say, oh, this is the worst thing that's ever happened, and my pain is worse than everybody else's. And I'm not faulting people who feel that way, okay? But the fact of the matter is, you got to be careful with grief because it can take on a life of its own and then become your life. Or
absolutely,
you can push forward through the fear, through the terrors, and eventually you will find the right path through grief. Grief is not something you get over. It is a process that you go through. And that's what I discovered in the Costa Rican rainforest. And I wasn't prepared. I was barefoot. I didn't have a shirt on. I was terrified. But the fact of the matter is I didn't have a choice. And grief is like that. When there's nothing you can do about the fact somebody you love has died.
That's
what
right.
We can do is change how we react to it. And the fact of the matter is, whether we like it or not, that path through that dark and scary jungle is one we're all going to have to take. It's waiting for you, whether you like it or not.
Just don't let the monkeys come get me, Mark. That's all
well,
I
Well, they
ask.
Were, you know, it was pretty scary. I mean, you know, because, you know, it's raining, it's lightning, and all of a sudden I'm in this jungle. And I've hiked through, I mean, I've hiked in jungles in South America, Central America, and the rainforest here and in Southeast Asia. You know, so I've been in my share of jungles. And I do know that, you know, you wear shoes, heavy shoes, you know, you wear long pants, you wear a shirt. But, you know, I just wasn't thinking. And the fact is, I wasn't prepared. And I wasn't ready for it. And guess what? That's how death can hit you sometimes. I mean, sometimes you do know a loved one is dying. And as a friend of mine said who watched his father die slowly of cancer, he said to me, getting to say goodbye is highly overrated. He said, I had to watch my dad die an inch at a time for 9 months. And it was horrible. You know,
yeah,
because I remember, you know, my mother passed unexpectedly, and I was devastated. And he said, well, Mark, he goes, would you want to trade places with what I went through? And not that I would ever want to take consolation in the suffering of others, but it did give me perspective.
Yes, I that is a great perspective because I'm a nurse, so I see it, all the different ones all the time and how people react to it. But I got to ask you, first of all, you know, I mean, next time you go to Costa Rica, be sure you wear underwear. I hope you have, because there is a bug you can get from the water that goes up your, you know what, and goes into your urine. So I
yeah,
just have
yeah,
a
I'm very, you know, very well aware of that. I've been actually went swimming in the Amazon. That was a trip. I was on this expedition and we were going up the Amazon, and we got to this point. And, you know, we'd been fishing for piranha like a couple hours earlier. And
no.
I was terrified that, you know, don't fall in the water, you know, because those Hollywood movies where you fall in the water, ultimately,
yeah,
like,
why?
Kick you to the bone in like 10 seconds. Well, the Indians, the natives that were living there, they said it's not really like that. He said, but you certainly don't want to get into a school of them. So they are all swimming, and they go, well, it's safe here. I go, how do you know it's safe here? Because the water's like black. And it's because of the tannic acid in it. It makes it really dark.
Yeah.
So I jumped in, and I'm swimming around. It actually felt very refreshing. But after I proved my manhood that I could swim in the Amazon, all I wanted to do was get out of it, because I could swear the creature from the Black Lagoon was on its way.
Listen, good. It's better you than me, because I wouldn't even have stuck my toe in that water. So I commend you for all of your adventurous activities. But so when you say that, I'm entranced when you talk about this. What is on the other side, Mark? Tell everybody. What is spirit? Is what, you know, that's such a broad question, and I'm not going to go into it because you'll tell me to be quiet, because I'll ask a million questions, and I know that's where I'm headed. But tell me, when you connect to the other side, tell me what they're saying. Are they there for us always? Do they have a job over there? I think people really want to know, when you die, are you just hanging out with your loved ones that have missed you, or do you actually have other work you're doing over there?
That's an excellent question, Bonnie. every reading's unique and every reading's different, but in several of the readings I've conducted, spirits do give some indications of what it's like. Generally, what they tell me is it's beyond your understanding. And it's like, oh, don't give me that. Okay. And one time I said, come on, give me something here. And what the indication was that, well, we're pure energy. And in the limited material form that you're in, you can't really understand what it's like. So what I've come to see is, think of your body as a bottle, and your spirit is in the bottle, and your brain is the cork. Our brain is the arbiter, if you will, between our limited, finite, material world self and our perception of the finite world and the connection to the higher self and to God, which is the infinite connection. And the brain is specifically created to give us this limited perception, so that when we die, the cork is removed from the bottle, and then we revert to our infinite state. So many times, spirits will, during the course of a reading, create a point of reference that we can understand. I'd like to see if, and I'm not looking at the chat room, but how many people in the chat room have had a dream where they have connected with a deceased loved one? And I'll bet in pretty much every one of those responses where they say yes, it's going to be a beautiful or a familiar or some type of bucolic environment. And what it is, I was doing a reading one time, and this husband and wife came through. It was for their daughter. And the wife showed me she was standing on this balcony overlooking vineyards. And the husband, he was riding a horse like through the West. And the client, she was cracking up, and she says, my mother loved going to Napa Valley to the vineyards. To her, that was the best place on the earth. And my father loved to go horseback riding and camping, and my mother couldn't stand doing that. She says, I'm not sleeping on the ground, and I'm not riding a horse. And the funny thing is, they came in together, but her father gave me a glimpse of what he loved to do the best, and the mother gave me a glimpse of what she loved to do the best. Now, was she really at a vineyard? Was he really horseback riding in the Old West? No. We can't really understand. What they're doing is they're creating something that you and I can relate to, which is very positive with them. And so they tell me that they're constantly busy because as pure energy, they don't sleep. They don't need to eat. They don't die. They don't get sick. So they're like electricity. I mean, they're more than that. But they don't get old. They don't die. And they're constantly learning and evolving. And I said, evolving in what way?
Yeah.
And that's where it gets kind of hazy. They said, well, we're going like to a higher frequency, a greater understanding, which leads me to the conclusion that the other side has a multitude of levels. And I'm not alone in this thinking. When you look at my religious background as a Catholic, you know, we have heaven, purgatory, and hell. So you have more than one level to the other side. And I always like to say that heaven is for Catholics, purgatory is for Protestants, and hell is for everybody else. You know, we still have limbo, but it got canceled. But on the other hand, Well, the Muslims talk about seven different levels to paradise. The Mormons have three different levels to heaven alone. The Buddhists and the Hindus believe in multiple levels on the other side. So there's really nothing new about that. It's just understanding it in terms of frequency. And so when a spirit leaves the body and they cross into that new dimension, it's like going to different radio stations, if you will. Apparently, if you're not such a wonderful person, you go to the lower end, like 89.5 on the FM dial. And if you're Mother Teresa, you're up at 107.9999 on the higher frequencies. So, and their objective is to ascend. And I believe that the higher frequencies are closer to and part of what we would call the light, which apparently is a spiritual energy of God or our ability to perceive it. I know I'm getting, you know, kind of esoteric with this, and I do touch upon this in Never Letting Go, and then, of course, in Evidence of Eternity, I discuss it as well.
Well, you know what, Mark? One of the things, I'm glad you brought this up, and we have, I mean, I love my audience. I want to say hello and thank you to everybody in chat, and we do have a lot of chatters. We do have a lot of listeners. I am thankful every minute of every day for everybody that tunes in and hears us on a daily basis, and I thank you for coming to listen to Mark. And one of the things that you just touched on was, especially levels. I mean, I think we're brought up in the book also that a spirit came through and he was murdered. Okay, and the mother you had happened to see a mother, you know, at a conference, and with him standing back was the person who murdered him, and you were shocked. So do you remember that in your book that you had written?
Of course. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. So can you explain, like, you know, that's a hard concept. I mean, I'm Jewish, so we believe in only heaven, so guess what? I don't have to worry about it. Ha ha, but no. You know, I love that because that's a great concept for me. I don't believe, but I want you to explain it because it's hard for me to understand to explain it.
See,
to people.
In Judaism, I believe Olam Haba is the term for the world to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so Judaism does not specifically discuss the nature of the other side. Most of the rabbis that I've talked to indicate that we dwell in the house of the Lord, but what the house of the Lord is shrouded in mystery, and that's fine. And Judaism and the Kabbalah, most certainly, mm-hmm. extremely mystical and very mysterious.
I love the Kabbalah. Yeah,
the Kabbalah is wonderful. And then there's the Chassidic sect of Judaism, which believes that people live a succession of lifetimes. And when I started looking into that, it appears that reincarnation is at the root of all the major religions. In the Chassidic sect of Judaism, a succession of lifetimes and being born again and again and again, well, that's reincarnation.
Yeah.
In Buddhism and Hinduism, certainly they believe in reincarnation.
Yeah.
And in the Christian Bible, there are a number of references to living more than one lifetime. In fact, after the Transfiguration, where Jesus took some of his disciples to the top of a mountain and he brought forth the spirits of Moses and Elijah, mediumship, in a very, very big and in a glowing way, which would indicate that Christ, being Christ, also had incredible mediumistic gifts. But after that, the disciples and he were having a discussion, and he said, "Who do you say that I am?" And one of them said, "Well, some say that you are John the Baptist. Others say that you are the prophet Elijah returned." And Jesus said, "Elijah has returned, but they did not see him, for he appeared as John the Baptist." Well, Elijah lived something like 800 years before Christ. So if that isn't a reference to reincarnation, then what is it?
And so when you start
looking at that, and what happens is that when politics, in other words, the Roman Empire, when the Roman Empire, which initially persecuted Christians but then became Christian itself, took control of it, they did very Roman things. They then elevated Jesus to godhood status and said, and Constantine the Great, the Roman Emperor, said in his decree that Jesus is God and he will return, but until he does, I am God's representative on earth. This is history. And so this is what started happening not only in the Roman Empire, but after it crumbled, then all the kingdoms in Europe, and the Muslims picked up on that too. In fact, we're seeing this now in a very perverted way with ISIS, when they keep talking about they're the caliphate. The caliphate, the caliphs, were religious political leaders okay, who are quote-unquote ordained and anointed and appointed by God to control vast areas of land. The last caliphate was the Turkish Ottoman Empire, which was defeated and dismantled at the end of World War I. So there's nothing new about God wants me to be king. Okay, that's been going on for a long time. In fact, I mean, for thousands and thousands of years. So the reason I'm bringing all this up is it is the politics and the politicians who have really muddied the waters when it comes to the beauty and the love messages and the spirituality of all the great religions.
Yeah.
All of them have been tainted and not necessarily a positive way by these people who need a moral justification for their political objectives and their egotistical agendas. So they say, well, God wants me to be the caliph. God wants me to be the Holy Roman Emperor. God wants me to be the supreme Ayatollah nut job of Iran, and et cetera, et cetera. So, sorry, a little jab there at the Iranians.
No, I have to tell you, because I do have a sense of humor, and I've got to say, but if they want me to be queen, I hope you're going to vote for me.
I don't think I'd want the job. We all think, wouldn't it be great? But I remember this story that a Hindu Swami told me. He said there was a Swami who went to this Maharaja in India, and he lived with the Maharaja. And the Maharaja said one day, he said, "Well, what makes you so different from me? You wake up, you eat, you sleep, you require exercise." He said, "We are the same. What makes you better than me or different than me?" And the Swami said, "Let us go for a walk." And the Maharaja said, "Okay." So they start walking through the jungle, and they're going down this path. And the Maharaja says, "Well, how far are we supposed to go?" And the Swami said, "Well, as far as we need to go." And he said, "Well, it's getting late, and I have responsibilities, and I have a palace, and I have an army, and I have taxes that must be collected." And the Swami looked at him and said, "Now you know the difference." And he kept walking.
I love that. I love that. And I can rock with that. And everybody in chat saying I'm being a really good girl to you, Mark. Because, my next thing is, well, that's okay because I ran that empire. But I'm not going to go with that because they will tell me I'm being a bad girl with you. So, bringing it back to that part in your book, how do you explain, remember Mark Schwab, I think it was, and I don't know that I can use names, but.
Yeah, you can use his name. Yeah. He is one of the most evil people. Mark Dean Schwab. I don't really want to give away the whole story because people really need to read it. But let me tell you this. Juni Rios Martinez was an 11-year-old boy who was kidnapped, raped, and murdered by Mark Dean Schwab, who took his body, stuffed it in a locker, and dumped it in a swamp. He was an incredibly evil person, a total psychopath, showed absolutely no remorse. And I did a reading for his mother, Vicky Rios Martinez, and she is the most amazing, incredible, beautiful soul I have ever met. I have nothing but admiration for this woman.
Absolutely.
And the chapter in Never Letting Go, which discusses this, is entitled Forgiving Those on the Other Side. And I would not be doing Junie's legacy justice for me to paraphrase the story.
I don't want you to tell the story because I do want people to read the book. It is a fascinating book, and I could tear it page by page and go through it. But what I want to know, and this is why I brought it up, not so much their part of the story, but if when we all become disincarnate, does everybody, you know, if let's say like, you know, people say, and I hate bringing this up because it makes my skin crawl, so I am going to bring it up just really very briefly, but you look at Hitler and he killed many people. Do you think we all, and this is why I asked about that chapter, do we all, you think there's different levels, and I know I feel there's different levels, but where do you think that spirit, if we came down here with a life plan, do you think that was planned? And if not, what went wrong?
It very well may have been planned. We have to look at the evil people as everyone has a part to play. I mean, what's a superhero story without supervillains? And I don't mean to be flippant about that, but everybody has a part to play. And these dark energies that walk amongst us and do terrible things, perhaps in the material world, they are inflicting upon us lessons and life experiences that we could not obtain or have when we're in pure energetic format on the other side. And I don't pretend to understand the mind of God, but there is a reason for all of these things to happen, the good and the evil. Now, it's funny you mention Hitler, because, and I go into Hitler quite a bit in a lot
maybe
of my lectures.
Well, that's maybe why I brought him up. You know, I do rock.
Well, Hitler was an immensely spiritual person. Now, when I say spiritual, I don't mean in the positive sense.
Yeah, I would hope.
He was involved in the Thule Society, particularly Heinrich Himmler. And the Thule Society was an outgrowth of the Theosophical Society, but perverted outgrowth. And Heinrich Himmler was involved very heavily in black magic and witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And the Nazis had a plan for post-war Europe. They were going to eradicate all the people of the Jewish faith. That was their quote-unquote final solution, which is really sickening. And then after the war, they were going to work on eliminating Christianity and replacing it with a revised version of the ancient Nordic religion. They really had these far-reaching plans, and all men, all Germanic men, were going to be allowed up to three wives because they wanted to rapidly increase the number of Aryans of the master race. I mean, I've read a number of books on what their plans were in the post-war era, and it's really quite terrifying. It's really, really terrifying.
Well, you know what, Mark, is even more terrifying to me is that they even got that far. I mean, even to write it. When I think about it, it goes with free will, I guess, because the people could have uprised a lot earlier maybe, and we saw what happened when they didn't, which then, you know, that was lessons learned about, you know, society and what we could do. So maybe you're right. But it made me, you know, but that they got that far is amazing, don't you think? And not in a good way.
Well, Hitler told everybody what he was going to do in his book, Mein Kampf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he spelled it out, what he was going to do. He said France needed to be destroyed. There needed to be this new world order. Jews needed to be eliminated. I mean, communism was the ideological enemy of National Socialism. And this is happening right now in our world. ISIS is telling the world what they're going to do. They said that the world needs to be under Islamic State jurisdiction. Everyone who doesn't believe the way they do should be eliminated. Jews should be wiped off the map. Christians should be wiped off the map. I mean, they are telling people, and we can sit there and laugh at them, but the fact remains is they are a cancerous organization which is spawning cancers in North Africa, in Southeast Asia, throughout the Middle East. I mean, when you hear about people from Europe and the United States going to join these morons, And I was reading in BBC that there's this thing called jihadi cool. Like in Europe, they think it's cool to join the jihad. To me, cool is like hanging out with Jim Morrison in the Doors and, you know, and you go into an ashram and meditating. Cool is not beheading people and committing murder. I love what John Lennon said. If you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you, brother, is you have to wait.
I love that, too. I mean, you know, are you a rocker like me?
Oh, I love rock and roll. I like all kinds of music. And it's funny because, like, the Beatles and particularly George Harrison, he's my favorite musician. That was not my generation. That was before me. But and somebody once, I was at a party, and I said, oh, why don't we put on that Paul McCartney album? And she goes, well, McCartney's not your generation. I said, well, neither is Mozart, but I listen to Mozart too, and I do. And so basically, if you know, music is good. Like I love Coldplay, I love Maroon 5. I mean, there's, you know, I like Faith Hill. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff out that I like. I even try listening to rap occasionally. The only problem I have with it just seems rather redundant musically. I mean, the words are great, but it's very formulaic.
You know what? I listen to, you sound like me. I'm a rapper. Of course, I'm only 16, if you ask my audience. So I, like, get into everything. But I am a rocker, and I did play The Doors for you when you came in, so just remember.
I know.
I knew who you were. But another, I want to ask you about dimensions and simultaneous realms of living. So do you believe that in the book also, do you feel that spirit is also in a different dimension? You say it vibrates, and we all know that it vibrates in a different, to a different frequency. Do you feel there are dimensions that they go to and realms? Do you think there's other type of spirit?
Well, all right, let me ask you a question. When you say spirit, what exactly do you mean? Because, see, this is probably where I break with most of the people in the psychic and mediumistic realm. A lot of people refer to, they say, well, spirit told me this or spirit told me that. I refer to the individual energies that come to me as spirits. I do not refer to God as spirit.
No,
I refer
I don't,
to God as
yeah.
to God. Yeah.
Me too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on the same page there.
Yeah.
The other side is another dimension. It's a parallel dimension, universe, what have you, which is existing, coexisting simultaneously to us. And that's why in Evidence of Eternity, I refer to mediumship instead of mediumship as interdimensional communication, because that's really what it is. Mediumship is a term that was coined in the Victorian era. And in the mid-19th century in Britain and America, mediumship became all the rage, very vogue. The British royal family, particularly Queen Victoria, was into it. Mary Todd Lincoln, First Lady of the U.S., was into it. And so mediumship had sort of its heyday up until the 1930s. And then it sort of went back into, you know, underground, and then it resurged, I believe, probably in the 1970s again. I mean, it's always been there. It's always been there. It's just, you know, comes in and out of vogue. But now it's openly discussed. And so a lot of the thinking, the understanding, and the terminology about mediumship was coined in the Victorian era. And so I am renaming things. In what I believe to be a 21st century way of looking at it. So to answer your question directly, yes, the other side is a different dimension. And on the other side, there are different levels or frequencies. And according to the string theorists in quantum physics, there is not just a universe, but there's multiverses.
Absolutely.
So what may happen is when a spirit's on the other side, he or she may go through a number of incarnations here in our material world, and when that energy, that soul, that spirit, that person has finally finished with whatever lessons are germane to this dimension, then you move on to another dimension, and you go through another series of incarnations and so on and so forth. And I had a spirit tell me that one time in a very, very deep meditative state. And I said, well, that sounds like a long time. Yeah. And I said, does it ever end? So that sounds like a lot of work. And
Eternity
never ends. And the response was, why do you worry of such things? You should be concerned about what you're doing, where you are now, and getting the most experience and benefit from it.
You know, I love that. That's something that sounds exactly like what they would say. But you do know that, when you're talking to that spirit or you're getting messages, do you have to come back? Like I know people here that I can tell you are really old, old, old souls that must have reincarnated for many, 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 many lifetimes here. And they say they're tired. They don't want to come back. Do you have the choice? Do you know if we have the choice to come back?
I think we do. But I think that most spirits want to come back so that they can learn as much as they can. You know, we have to get to the point where we are free from birth. And when we're free from birth, that means we have no more ties or connections or involvement with the material world. So we've learned every lesson that we can from this dimension. But does that mean that we stop evolving and growing? And I don't believe that we do. I think it's a continual process. You know, the idea of having to go through life again and mm-hmm. being a kid and having, you know, and you know, my family is a good family. They were, you know, they treated me with love and respect, and you know, I can't complain about it. And I know that there are many people that are in broken families and impoverished. I mean, think about these poor people in squalor, people in living under ISIS, living in places where you don't know if a bomb's going to go off. I mean, there's really horrible things, and you know, those poor people. I hope that, you know, when they leave this world, they don't have to come back to it. Because hell is not, and I'm with you, Bonnie, I don't believe in hell. Hell is a bunch of medieval superstitious nonsense created, you know, by the Romans to scare people into, you know, obeisance to the emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Hell's here on this planet. Hell is here on
Earth.
We don't need to create a mythological guy with a pitchfork running around scaring us.
I love that. I agree with you. And I'm so glad to hear that, because I hear that a lot. Hell is here on Earth. And it's just how you maneuver through hell is what some people, you know, say. Which, you know what, Mark, I've got to ask you, because I know there's some things we want to clear up too. And I know we're getting a little bit out of time, but I know I'm going to keep talking. So I would love to know. I'm so intrigued. And I know this is not going to be, I know you have, you also have people on the other side that are your family members as well as I do, but your mom and dad, they were both mediums and psychics. I mean, how crazy is that for you to be raised like that?
Yeah, well, it's kind of, you know, yeah, my family was not Leave It to Beaver. It was more like Everybody Loves Raymond meets the Sixth Sense.
I'll take the Sixth Sense. I wasn't a Beaver Cleaver thing anyway.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I mean, it's not like we sat around channeling spirits all day, but when a psychic phenomenon would happen or somebody would perceive a spirit, it wasn't looked at as a weird thing. It would be discussed, and then it was like, okay, you know, pass the ketchup. You know, it was just part of our lives, and I feel very, very honored and privileged to come from such a long line of psychically gifted people. You know, my mother was just, she was the whole package. She could foretell future events. She was a good, great read on people. She could perceive spirits. I mean, and she was just so much fun to be around. My dad, he's still here in our world.
Perfect.
He's getting up there, and it's funny because I don't mean to get all political, but when my dad was one of the first Navy SEALs. And you know, he's quite elderly
thank
now.
Him. Yeah, thank
oh,
him.
Well,
for
well, when I was watching TV and the whole thing about Bin Laden, you know, when SEAL Team 6 took out Bin Laden, the phone rings, okay? And pardon my language, but I pick up the phone and there's Dad and he goes, "Mark, my old unit got that son of a..."
I love it.
And
it,
I was like, "All right, Dad." He goes, "Yeah."
You can say it because Susan does. She always says that on our show. So you've got to thank him. And I didn't mean him going on the other side. Actually, I am going to, you'll hear who I'm going to quote is, I think, your mother's father. So that's kind of what I meant too. But your dad, I mean, please thank him. My goodness gracious, how much can that man do? And I know he's had a hard, you know, I know that he's had family members also that were psychic. It's usually on the mother's side. So to me, you're
it
an
is,
anomaly.
Well, yeah, he has ability, as did his sister. He had three sisters. One of them had ability, his mother and his maternal grandmother. And they all had ability, but they were real kind of quiet about it. And, you know, my dad, he was in this 4th of July parade a couple years ago. And he was in the veteran section. He was in this truck that said, you know, World War II veterans. And when it came around the corner, everybody stood up and started cheering. And when the parade was over, my dad had tears in his eyes. And he said, "Those people cheered for me." I go, "Well, Dad, I mean, my God, the things you went through." I mean,
yeah.
He was in the Battle of Okinawa, the Battle of Leyte Gulf. I mean, some major engagements. I mean, seeing, you know, people don't realize that the invasion of Okinawa was a larger invasion than D-Day was. D-Day had 600 ships. Okinawa had 1,200 U.S.
Wow.
ships. And the Japanese were they literally fought to the death. I mean, it was just an absolutely horrible, horrible battle. And people were coming up out of the crowd and hugging him and thanking him for his service. And I remember he wept, and I go, "Dad, you should be happy." And he said, "All I can think about is all of my friends who died." He said, "It was horrible." And, I mean, I could tell some stories that are just, you know, really intense, but there was this one, and if you let me digress just for a minute,
yeah,
it was during the invasion of Okinawa. Now, Okinawa is a chain of islands to the south of Japan, and so we had the U.S. and allies, mostly the U.S., had retaken the Philippines, and the Battle of Iwo Jima was horrible. The Japanese fought to the death on Iwo Jima, inflicted tremendous casualties on the United States. And so now Okinawa, we had to take Okinawa because that was the last stepping stone to Japan, and the Japanese knew that they had to beat us there or they were going to lose the war. And so my dad was a gunner on this ship called an LSM. And the LSM is Landing Ship Mediums, and they had medium, no pun intended, but they had a very shallow draft. And so what the LSMs did is they came up to the shore and they released the landing craft that were full of Marines. So basically the Japanese were really trying to sink the LSMs because if they could, you know, sink them, they'd kill the Marines and all that. And Dad said that they were coming up on the shore, and all of a sudden, this Japanese torpedo bomber swooped down out of the sky, and it released a torpedo, and it was heading right for their ship. And everyone's screaming, and they were trying to shoot it in the water. And Dad said, and all he heard was someone scream, "Hang on!" And he braced himself. And you have to realize that the torpedo, an LSM, was about 200 feet long, and these torpedoes were designed to sink aircraft carriers that are 1,000 feet long. Okay,
wow.
So if that thing would have hit the ship, that would have blown up. And he said, and they saw it coming because they could see the trail of bubbles in the water. And he said, all he heard was someone scream, "Hang on!" And he braced himself, and nothing happened. And everyone said, what's going on, what's going on? And they looked, and because the ship had such a shallow draft, the torpedo went right underneath the ship. He said, we probably cleared it by maybe 6 feet. And Dad said, and everyone was just like, oh, my God, because that the ship would have exploded. He said, and all I thought was, if it hits, will I die? And if I don't die, will I be in one piece? And if I am in one, and if I don't die, what am I gonna be like? And he said all this went through his mind, and he told me that Mark, life is precious, and it can be over in the blink of an eye, and that's why you do everything you can in this life. So don't hurt people, okay? But experience and savor life, because it really is a gift. And he said, and if my ship had been any other configuration, or we'd had more cargo or men on board, I wouldn't be here. And he goes, and neither would you.
Oh my God. You know what that makes me think of, Mark? That makes me think another thing. I'm going to go back to your book. Wasn't his time. It was not his time. And you have that in the book about certain people. You say it's just not their time. That I think it was your mother who was walking across the street with your sister, and
yes.
There was a bus. And that, as soon as you said that, and I'm listening and I'm watching as your father's on that boat, I see your mother being, you know, dragged right across the street by a hand that you say throws her on the other side. And it just wasn't their time.
Yeah, I'll never forget hearing about that, and that's one story I don't mind sharing. My mother was holding my sister, who was, you know, barely a toddler, and they lived in New Jersey, and it was snowing, it was a blizzard, and she had groceries in one arm and the baby in the other, and all she wanted to do was get home. And she's about another block away, and she came to the street, and there was, you know, it looked like it was clear, and she stepped into the street, and she heard psh, and looked, and it was a bus, and it was coming right at her, and she started to scream. And then Mom said she felt hands grab her really hard, yank her up off her feet, and fling her onto the sidewalk. And the bus went right by, and she's laying on the sidewalk, and luckily the you know, she dropped the groceries and cushioned my sister so she wouldn't get hurt. And my mom's looking around for someone to thank, and there was nobody there. And it was at that point, she said, like in the blazing storm, she felt this stillness all around her, and she knew that it was spiritual intervention, some type of divine intervention.
And she just sat
there in the snow, clutching my sister, who was crying in her arms, and she burst out into tears, thanking God. I mean, that, it's just, and the thing is, Bonnie, I have heard similar stories from people from all walks of life that all of a sudden something grabbed them and yanked them out of the way. My mother didn't jump up in the air and fly out of the road. She said she didn't. She said she was paralyzed with fear. Now, I think that if your life plan is about to be interfered with, then the divine will intervene. And I caution everybody listening to this, and I'm not being funny when I say this, please do not test this theory, okay? Do not intentionally put yourself in harm's way to see if, oh, maybe an angel or spirit or a spiritual entity or God or whoever will try to save you. Do not do that.
You know, that is great advice. That's great advice.
People say, well, I hear that folks that go through near-death experiences have enhanced psychic ability, so then they try to, like, drown themselves. I know that sounds funny, but there's people that do insane things like that. It's like, don't do that.
Yeah,
okay?
That is insane.
I mean, that's crazy because, you know, near-death experience, all right, near-miss, well, sometimes you don't miss.
Listen, hey, I'm a nurse who did the ER. Near-death, I've seen it all. I've seen kids doing pranks, Mark, that you can't even believe, because they think either that, you know, some divine intervention is going to happen or that they're invincible. And you're right. Please don't test the waters, because when it's your time, it's your time. You don't need to force it. I so badly, Mark, I want to end. We only have 10 minutes, and I want you, I want to end with this these two things, because I know this will mean a lot to all of us. But what I do want you to do, and I haven't done this, and it just seemed like 90 minutes flew by, I want you to tell people how to find you, what you do, how they can. I know that you're on www. You can do, isn't it, thepsychiclawyer.com?
It's the best way to remember my website. It's the same title as my book, neverlettinggo.com.
Oh,
and
that's
if you go to never, yeah, if you go to neverlettinggo.com, you can also, there's an icon there to like my Facebook page, because it's constantly being updated. And on neverlettinggo.com, you can find out about Never Letting Go, about how to pre-order Evidence of Eternity. You can also...
Right?
Yes, and yes, and also my calendar of events. I actually have an event tomorrow night here in Florida at Aquarian Dreams, but on Saturday, October 25th from 2 to 4 p.m., I'll be at the Namaste Bookstore in Manhattan. And Namaste is at 85th Avenue and 14th Street in Manhattan on the 11th floor. If you go to my Facebook page, it's got all that also on my website as well. And then on November 8th, I will be speaking at the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach. And I'll be there from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. I'll be giving a presentation on spirit communication as a guide in healing from grief. And also, at the conclusion of that presentation, I will be conducting gallery readings for audience members.
I love that, Mark. And I'll tell you, the other thing I want everybody to know before I go into the last few things I want to say is this. Please, Mark's books are fabulous. I can't even, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. I got to tell you, you were the reason I got on Facebook. I think you were my first friend. And then I was the reason I got on LinkedIn. So see, you've helped me out over the years actually get more technical, and you didn't know that. But
well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, but thank you in either event.
Yes, I don't know either, Mark, but at least it got me catapulted into what I'm doing. So you are my mentor. People always knew that. You maybe didn't. I talked to you a couple years ago, and it was unbelievable reading. And I had 104 temperature when you were talking to me, or 103, so it was tough. But I do have to tell everybody that Mark does do readings. You can go to his website, I think, and you could sign up. Is that correct, Mark, that they can sign up for a reading with you?
Yes, it is. It's the tab called Schedule a Reading. And please, everyone, read the page. Because what happens is people fill out the form and they start saying, well, how much is it? What is this? What is that? And if you just read the page, well, I mean, most people do, but it's amazing how many people will say, well, how do you do this? It's like, that's why we wrote the page, you know. But the thing is, the way my website is constructed is to answer as many of your questions as possible. And also, if you go to the FAQs, the frequently asked questions, it'll talk about how to conduct yourself, or not how to conduct yourself, but how to approach a reading, what to expect, how it all works. And for those who are suffering with grief, there's a page called Grief Management. And the Grief Management is a resource. There will be coping strategies, an essay on the immortality of the soul. There is also information on what to say and not to say to somebody who is coping with the loss of a loved one. You know, one of the things not to say is, oh, well, you're young, you'll meet someone else, or, gee, you can always have another child. You know, you don't say things like that. It's better to say things like, I'm so sorry for your loss. You will be in my thoughts and prayers. Tell the person, you know, the reason I always loved your mother was because, and then share a beautiful story about her. And sometimes saying nothing is appropriate, maybe just a hug. Even if you say to someone, I don't even know what to say, but my heart goes out to you. Let these people who are suffering know that you care and treat them with kid gloves, because if you haven't been through the death of a loved one, you're going to, and
yeah.
it is a very, very delicate and painful situation.
Absolutely, and I've got to tell you that I just want everyone to know out there that Mark is amazing. I have had a reading from him, and he is fabulous. Sign up. It will be something you will never forget. If you can give it, you know, to somebody you know that is really grieving, this can change their life. He also goes into when it is a good time to schedule a reading in this book, Never Letting Go, Healing Grief from the Other Side. I can't wait for your new book, Mark. I am so excited. I have two things to end this with, though, and I'm really sad that I'm ending this because I'm just going to cry. But there is two things that I've read in your book I want everybody to know before we leave. One is, and you can tell everyone who quoted this, but let go of the sorrow, but hold on to the love is one of the most profound statements, Mark. It stays with me. And please thank your mother for sending that to you. Am I right?
Yes, yes. That message really, really helped me a lot. And it came to me not long after my mother passed from her from the other side. People ask me, why is your book Never Letting Go? You're supposed to let go. The title means never let go of the love for the person who died. Let go of the sorrow and the agony associated with the loss, but never let go of the love for the person who died. You're not going to, so why? Just don't be in a state of torture because someone has died. We're all going to pass, and it does hurt when we lose a loved one, but realize that when you die, you really don't. Energy is forever. They will be there to greet you when it is your appointed time to cross into the light.
And the other thing I want to leave them with, Mark, before we all have to go, is the other one that has got me too, is there is something beyond this life, and it is wonderful.
Yes, it is. That was my mother's father who transmitted that message. And that's a long story and a good one to read in the book. But yes, there is something beyond this life, and it is wonderful.
I love
but
that, Mark.
Do not intentionally cut your life short. You're here for, well, sometimes people that
right.
are suffering, you know, may misinterpret that. We're here to live out our life. And sometimes life, you know, it was Irma Bombeck who said, if life's a bowl of cherries, how come I'm laying in the pits? You know, and sometimes that's what it is. But it's all for reasons. And, you know, life is a journey, not a destination.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to tell you, we have wonderful, everybody that's been in chat, everybody that is listening that will archive this show, and all our callers. I want to thank you, Mark, because I only have 2 minutes before we're going to have to end this call. I do hope, or actually the show, I do hope that you'll come back. I've wanted you, I'm one of those people, and I just want to tell you this since I do have 2 minutes. I'm one of the ones that didn't read your paper, because when I wanted you to come on the show, your secretary kept saying to me, okay, but you have to fill out a paper. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm not filling out a paper. I don't know what paper they're talking about. And then when I said, well, tell Mark, thank you. I really appreciate it. I love his book. And I wish I had the opportunity, you know, to have him on my show. She said, Bonnie, all we asked you to do was fill out a piece of paper. So I'm one of those that didn't do what you told me, like read your paper, so that I would have known to fill it out. So I do want you to know that you are
oh,
right.
Oh, it's the media. It's the media. It's the media request form, because what it is, people will send us messages on Facebook, and the Facebook email is really unwieldy and difficult to work with. And so people that want to book me go to my website where it says Contact Mark and Media Requests. You just fill out that form, and then one of my team will get back with you.
I love it, and I hope, Mark, that you enjoyed yourself. We certainly enjoyed having you. I have just a few minutes left if you want to say anything before we end the show, but I want to thank you. You are so wonderful. You have given to everyone that has read this book and to read your new one a new lease on life for people who are living. And I just want to thank you for participating in life and letting us be part of yours through these books.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. And to all the listeners, just remember, God exists, heaven exists, our soul is immortal, we can communicate with those souls, and when it is our appointed time to leave the material world, we'll be reunited with our loved ones in the light.
Thank you so much, Mark. Again, I invite you back. I hope you're listening, because I'm going to make you come back. But thanks again, and good luck with your tour and your book, and we can't wait to read your new book.
Thank you, Bonnie. God bless.
Thank you. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.